Well, it is a privilege to be with you again. I felt we were a little pressured for time this morning, so I didn't want to use any time up with informal comments. But you know, we read in the Bible of the Lord's Day. I can't find anything in the Bible about the Lord's half day. So it's good to see you here for the evening sacrifice of praise, as well as the morning service. The Salvation Army, we don't agree with them totally theologically, but the Salvation Army was founded by a man called William Booth. And he and some of his officer cadets were on the train on one occasion going through the Swiss Alps. And General William Booth was in deep meditation and bent low, meditating. And one of the officer cadets said, "Look out the window, General. The view is so grand." And the old man never looked up. But this is what he said: "You keep the fire burning in your soul, for the tendency of the fire is to burn out." And that's the truth. And so we need to use these opportunities for worship and fellowship. Our friend that was leading the service this morning made special reference in the opening prayer about our religious liberties in this land. And someone once said, those who don't use their liberties are destined, don't use their liberties are destined to lose them. So it's very important that we keep our practices of worship and ministry and preaching in the open air and all those things, lest we might lose them. Well, I want to think this afternoon about one of the lesser characters of the Bible, Lot, Abraham's nephew. And let us give him all the credit. Let us set him in the most favorable light that we can to begin with. We read in the first epistle of, in the second epistle of Peter, chapter 2, verses 7 and 8, God delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked, for that righteous man dwelling among them, in seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. Now, another translation of that scripture is this: God delivered righteous Lot, sore distressed by the lascivious life of the wicked, for that righteous man, dwelling among them, in seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their lawless deeds. Now, you will undoubtedly have noticed the repetition of the word righteous. And that second translation of the scriptures I gave you was of the original. It is a correct translation, and I like that threefold emphasis. It's an important word there, because as you read the whole story of Lot in the book of Genesis, it's a sad story. And so it's a joy to read this New Testament evaluation of him, because without it, we might have been more severe in our conclusions concerning him. Now, undoubtedly, you're familiar with his story. Briefly, it's this: he left Ur in the Chaldees with his grandfather Terah and his uncle Abraham. And although there was nothing of the originality and initiative of Abraham in Lot, he did believe in Abraham's God. And therefore he accompanied Abraham in his journey. But we see that once in Canaan he was quite willing to leave Abraham, choosing for his residence, that's Lot, choosing for his residence the fertile valley of Jordan. And then next, as we read the story, we find him in Sodom, and we read, and we have read, how from that wicked city he was delivered. And in the concluding scene, which I ask our friend not to read, he's living in the rocky recesses of the mountains near Zoar, and that last recorded story of his life, the awful story of incest, presents a dark period indeed. And so it seems from the Old Testament representation of the scene that his life was, we could say, a wholly useless life. Yet I remind you that the Apostle Peter, by the Spirit of God, calls him righteous Lot. So I think we should take it that he was, in a sense, a saved man. He knew the Lord, at least after a fashion, but there was much in that man to be desired. Yet three times over there in 2 Peter 2, verses 7 and 8, the word righteous is used concerning him. And that being the case, I take it that some of the lessons that we can learn from his life are lessons that righteous people need to learn. Frankly, I'm persuaded that many Christians with far more light than Lot ever had are living the same useless life that characterized him. I wonder how much that was wrong with Lot's life we might find wrong in our own lives. You read of him in Genesis chapter 11, verse 31. Terah took Abram his son, and Lot the son of Haran his son's son, and Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go into the land of Canaan. Now they did not know that they were going into the land of Canaan, because Hebrews chapter 11 tells us that Abram went out not knowing whither he went. But God knew where he wanted him. So off they started. They made the journey from Ur and the Chaldees, and they got as far as a place called Haran, and there for a time they stayed. And then the first verse of Genesis chapter 12 tells us, the Lord had, mark the tense, the Lord had said unto Abram. So it wasn't as though he was saying it at that particular moment for the first time. He had already said this. Because you see, Abram had not gotten to Canaan yet. The Lord had said to him, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred. And we read there in verses 4 and 5, Abram departed as the Lord had spoken unto him. Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. Abram took Sarai his wife and Lot his brother's son and all their substance that they had gathered and the souls that they'd gotten in Haran, and they went forth into the land of Canaan. So there it is, Lot is before us in the company of Abram. Now I want to suggest four things to you this afternoon about Lot. Firstly, Lot was a thoughtless individual. Lot was indifferent to spiritual considerations. He did not value, as he should have, spiritual gifts and associations. He knew the Lord, or to use the New Testament term, we might say he was saved. But he didn't want to be a narrow believer or a committed believer. He was broad-minded. He had broad associations. This was Lot. This lack of understanding of the value of spiritual and eternal things was shown in Lot's willingness to separate himself from Abraham. He ought never to have allowed separation from Abraham. You see, he needed a friend like Abraham. Now, I'm sure you all know the story recorded in Genesis 13. Abraham went up out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him into the Negev. And when they were there, you remember there was a strife between the herdsmen of Abraham's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle. And the Canaanite and the Perizzites dwelled then in the land. Abraham said unto Lot, let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee. So Lot made his choice. And he did separate himself from Abraham. And in that he did that, he was removing himself from the sphere of spiritual life that had nurtured him, that had helped him up until that point. And the lesson for you and for me is this. If in providence God brings across your pathway some stalwart, strong, good servant of God, then we should be very careful about letting anything come between us and that individual. God doesn't bring strong people, good people, across our way just haphazardly. And they can be an immeasurable comfort and strength to help us in the hour of need. And we need to be on our guard. You know, there's a man here in England, a friend of mine, you may know him, David Carson. He lives in Chester. And in many ways, in my estimation, he's the finest open-air preacher I've ever heard. I think he came originally from Southern Ireland. And I was preaching one night in the edge of Manchester, and David came into the meeting, and I called him into the vestry. And this is what I said to him. I says, "Now, David, people are going to say negative things about me to you, and people say negative things about you to me. But let us agree not to listen to any of it, and to support and stand by each other." Now, I don't dot every I and cross every T with my friend David, and I'm sure he would say the same with regard to me. In fact, there's some people you get on more harmoniously at arm's length, don't you? But we have a harmonious relationship and a harmonious ministry in the gospel. And we have to be very careful about anything putting a wedge between us and a good person. Truly, Abraham had his faults. He wasn't a perfect man. On occasion, he did that which he should not have done. But on the whole, he was God's man. And so it was foolish, it was not wise at all, for Lot to capitulate to this suggestion of separating, even though Abraham had made it. He might better have said, "Now look, Abraham, I need you. What there is of strength, what there is of spirituality, what there is of evidence of God's blessing upon my life, I owe in part to you. So let us settle this problem between our herdmen in some different way." Well, that's the first observation I would give to support the idea that Lot did not value spirituality as he should have done. But Genesis 14 tells us something else about this same characteristic of Lot. When he failed to learn the lesson of captivity, he was ultimately rescued by Abraham, as we will reflect in just a second, from his captivity. And after he was rescued by Abraham, he didn't say, well, "I've learned my lesson. No, I'm going to stay close to Abraham." You see, there were four kings in the Mesopotamian area: Amraphel, Arioch, Chedorlaomer, and Tidal. And these four kings came against the cities of the plain, and they overcame them. Then for 12 long years the kings of those cities of the plain, Sodom and Gomorrah — those kings were two men called Abner and Bela — they had to serve these foreign kings. Eventually they decided to rebel. And when the battle was joined, the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled and fell there, and they that remained fled to the mountain. And these kings of Mesopotamia, we read, took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah, all their victuals, went their way, and they took Lot, Abraham's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and they departed. Well, news of that happening was brought to Abraham, who was dwelling under the oak trees at Mamre. We read, "When Abraham heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his trained servants, born in his own house, 318, and pursued them unto Dan." Now think of that. To the extent of all the land stretching to the north, he pursued these Mesopotamian kings. He divided himself against them, he and his servants, by night, and smote them, and pursued them unto Hobah, which is on the left hand of Damascus. So we think of all the trouble that Abraham went to. Think of all that was in his mind and upon his heart as he sought to rescue Lot from his predicament. And then we read this: he brought back all the goods, and also brought back again his brother Lot, and his goods, and the women also, and the people. He rescued him. He emancipated him. Now, wouldn't you think that that would have brought Lot to his senses? If he hadn't known before he needed Abraham, he certainly should know it now. But no, he was so spiritually insensitive. He was so ungracious. He was so unthankful that he didn't settle their problems. His herdsmen and the herdsmen of Abraham didn't get along any better than they'd even done before, even though Abraham had rescued Lot and all that he had. Now, these are little signs along the way that indicate to us, though Lot was righteous, though Lot knew the Lord, he wasn't following close to God, and he surely wasn't a wise man. He was willing to separate himself from Abraham, even when Abraham had rescued him. He still chose Sodom to the presence of Abraham. Now, how about the choices that you and I have to make? Sometimes, perhaps, our choices tell more about us than we realize. He's an unspiritual man, didn't value spiritual associations and spiritual privileges and benefits and blessings. The second thing I should like to observe about Lot this afternoon is that he was a supremely selfish individual. That comes out in Genesis 13, when Abraham said to him, "Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself from me, I pray thee. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. If thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left." Now we notice in the scriptures that Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. So Lot chose him. Seems something very deliberate about that statement in the scriptures to me. So Lot chose him, all the plain of Jordan. And Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves, the one from the other. From the very standpoint of age, from the very standpoint of family relationships, I suggest to you this afternoon that the right and proper thing for Lot to have done when Abraham made him his offer, choose whichever portion you want, whichever way you want to go, what he should have said is, "Now look, uncle, you're the one to make the choice. I am here, as it were, as your guest. I'm just tugging along and reaping the benefits of God's blessing upon you. Surely it's your right, it's your place to make the choice, not mine." But that was not Lot. Lot could only see little Lot and his interests. So supremely selfishly, he made his choice. The story says, Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and removed his tent as far as Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. And the Lord said unto Abraham, after that Lot was separated from him, "Lift up now thine eyes." If you think about that, what God said to Abraham, "Lift up now thine eyes." Well, God wouldn't tell Abraham to do what he was already doing, would he? And if he had to lift up his eyes, where were they? Well, I can picture Abraham going around in a somewhat depressed state, looking down, perhaps kicking the earth as he walked along, saying to himself, "Now that's some kind of ingratitude I have for a nephew. I gave him the opportunity to choose, and he did choose, and he took the best. And here I am, and I can see Abraham walking around in a circle with his head down, depressed, looking at the earth." And God says, "Hey, look up. Wait a minute. Abraham, Lot may have made the better choice in the short term, but you've made the better choice with eternity standing in view. Lift up now thine eyes. And he said to him, Look from the place where thou art, northward, southward, eastward, and westward, for all the land which thou seest. Now that included where Lot was. For all the land will I give to thee and to thy seed forever. So Lot was a thoughtless man, and he was also a supremely selfish man. Now, the third observation that I make is this afternoon, that Lot was a man who continually compromised. Now, you've often heard the question asked, haven't you? Where did Cain get his wife? Let me change that question for a moment. Where did Lot get his wife? Well, it doesn't say so in so many words in Scripture. And as far as I know, there's no mention of her until Lot lived in Sodom. And I wonder if there's not an inference there that that's where he got her. And if he did so, he was certainly marrying outside of the will of God for him. You know, I'm digressing, but I often say this in the pulpit because I mean it with all my heart. When two Christian people marry each other, marriage is very hard. It's not easy. When two non-Christians marry each other, marriage is very hard. It's not easy. But when a believer marries a non-believer, what fellowship of light with darkness? It's not impossible. I have an acquaintance in a certain church that I preach here in England. And when she was a young woman, she was very rebellious. She had godly parents who were very anxious about her. But a young fella, godless fella, used to whiz up on his motorbike, pop her on the back and whisk her away. And although she was entreated not to get too involved with him, she married him. And her late pastor, he's dead now, who was an acquaintance of mine, refused to conduct the wedding. But she married him. And when I see her now, she's a lady about my own age. She's beautifully dressed. Very fine, expensive clothing and all the rest of it. Very good material life. But you know what she says to me? One thing is lacking. One thing is lacking. There's no fellowship there. Oh, be not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. It's the root to heartbreak and disaster, let me tell you, if you're a single person this afternoon. A friend of mine, who's quite elderly, was telling me about a friend of his who was widowed. And he got remarried. And the man who got remarried said to my friend, I found there's something worse than loneliness. Incompatibility. And Christian believers and non-believers are incompatible. That's a little digression. Well, if he married this girl in Sodom, he was marrying outside of the will of God for him. At any rate, you'd have to agree with this. This woman's heart was in Sodom, and she never got beyond it. She was turned ultimately into a pillar of salt for looking back, for hankering, longing, yearning for Sodom, that wicked city. So Lot compromised, possibly, in connection with his marriage. But there is an amazing story which shows his compromising spirit, very graphically, in chapter 19. The beginning of the story is the time when God is about to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah and the other cities of the plain. And the Lord has dealt with this man Lot by sending two angels, these two men as they're spoken of in different places in the chapter. And they were vehement in their command to Lot. Escape with thy life. Look not behind thee, neither stay thou at all in the plain. Escape to the mountain, lest thou be consumed. And Lot says, Oh, not so, my Lord. Behold now, thy servant hath found favor in thy sight. You see, he was trying to train on the fact that God had been merciful to him and that God was merciful enough to deliver him out of the burning city. I have found favor in thy sight. Thou hast magnified thy mercy, which thou hast showed unto me, saving my life. I can't escape to the mountains. That's where he was told to go. I cannot escape to the mountain, lest some evil should overtake me. Well, we don't know where God's going to direct us in life. But if God tells us to go to the mountain is the safest place in all the world for you to be, and you'd better go. But this unspiritually minded man, Lot, this worldly wise man, says, that's not the place for me. He argues with God. I cannot escape to this mountain, lest evil overtake me and I die. Behold now, this city is near to flee unto. It's a little one. Look at it. Isn't it a little one? And my soul shall live. And he said unto him, see, I have accepted thee concerning this thing also, that I will not overthrow this city for the which thou hast spoken. And the city was Zoar. Do you know what Zoar means? Zoar means little. Little. Here was a little compromise. The compromising Christian, never going all the way with God, holding back if need be, holding back just a little, that's not the avenue to blessing. The tale is told of a man who came to the Jewish tabernacle of old, and the priest at the gate saw that he had a bulge under the fold of his garments. And he said, Nathan, what is that you have under your garment? Oh, it's nothing. Nothing to worry about. Let me just go in and worship. No. I am standing here as the guardian of the Lord's house. What is it that you've got there? He says, I've got a pig. He said, a pig? Yes, a pig. But it's just a little one. Look at it. It's a little cute piglet. Just a little one. And the priest drew himself up with all his power, put his piercing eyes upon Nathan and said, but that little pig will become a big pig sooner or later. Do you know, my wife who sat here in the congregation, she falls in love with every puppy and kitten she sees. But she's sensible in that she says, I don't want it because it won't always be like that. No, they grow up, don't they? They grow up. And compromises do that. They grow. Little ones eventually become big ones. You see, that's the point. People are foolish who try to bargain with God. We're not to be compromisers. That was one of Lot's difficulties. He continually compromised. Now, the final thing that I want to say this afternoon about Lot is that he was worldly. That's always the result of compromise. You always go deeper and deeper. Look, when Lot removed himself from Abraham, it says in Genesis 13:12, he pitched his tent toward Sodom. Genesis 14:12, the next chapter, tells us they took Lot, Abraham's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom. He started off moving towards Sodom, then he dwelt in Sodom. You see, the beginning of the work, little by little, more and more, until finally, ultimately, in Genesis chapter 19:1, we read, Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. The Hebraism behind that, it suggests that he was a man of importance. So far as the city was concerned, he sat in the gate of Sodom. Now look, the gate of Sodom was like the city hall. That's where all the business was transacted. We didn't read the verses this afternoon, but the verses where these guys were hammering on his door. They said, this one man, he came to sojourn with us, and he would needs be a judge. It's quite possible he was a judge in that society. I had a friend in Northern Ireland, he's dead now, elder in a church, and he used to talk about Lot, the mayor of Sodom. I don't think he was so far off the mark. He got ingratiated in that society until he moved to a position where he sat at the gate of Sodom. He sat in the city hall, you might say, in modern parlance. Perhaps the most tragic thing in all of this is that when he was told what was going to happen to Sodom, when the angel visitants impressed upon him the importance of his departure, they said, "Arise, take thy wife and thy two daughters which are here, lest thou be consumed in the iniquity of the city." And then the first four words of verse 16 there are devastating. "And while he lingered." How desperate can a man of God get? How foolish can a servant of God be? Here the fire of God in judgment is about to fall, and this silly man lingers. He doesn't take to heart the explicit, meaningful words of the Lord. And living that way, though it vexed his righteous soul, all Lot had to do to get away from that vexation of his righteous soul in Sodom was to move out of Sodom. That's all he had to do, but he wouldn't. He wouldn't move. He stayed there. Now I want you to see, as we come to a conclusion, a very solemn thing. His testimony was not accepted. His testimony was compromised. Look at this, it's tragic. "Lot went out and spoke unto his sons-in-law, which had married his daughters, and said, 'Up, get you out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city.' But he seemed unto his sons-in-law like one that mocked." Those boys couldn't take their father-in-law seriously because he was so compromised with worldliness. Lot had never talked to them that way before. He'd never been anxious about their lives before. He'd never been concerned about Sodom getting destroyed by God before. He had marred, he had ruined his testimony. And that was the result of worldliness. You see, Lot knew too much about Sodom and the goings on there to be comfortable with God. And he knew too much about Almighty God to be comfortable and at peace with Sodom. So he let his life be spoiled. He was thoughtless. He was supremely selfish. He constantly compromised. He lived a worldly life. I suppose some language used by the Apostle Paul is appropriate to Lot. He uses this phrase, does Paul, "saved so as by fire." As though a person is just plucked out of the flames. Man, that's no way to be saved. We should be seek and desire to be saved gloriously by the grace of God, and to have an entrance richly supplied unto the eternal kingdom. Well, I wonder if God says something to you individually today. Some decisions being made that ought to be made. Perhaps you'd need to say, "Preacher, I've been careless. Preacher, I've been compromising just a little. Preacher, I've been worldly. And I begin to see that I ought to be living more for the things that are not seen and eternal," which the pastor referred to a few moments ago in his prayer. You know, one of our English missionaries was a man called J. Hudson Taylor. Taylor used to say this: "There are two expressions that exhaust the vocabulary of every child of God: today and that day." Now you know what is meant by that day, don't you? That day when every one of us should give account of himself unto God. And of course, what Hudson Taylor was implying was this. If we live today with that day in view, we will be saved from living the useless sort of life that characterized this poor man Lot. Amen.